Blog Talk Radio.
Robert Gatewood.
In the house. Robert Gatewood up in the house.
Robert Gatewood in the house. Yeah. How you doing, brother?
Good. How you doing, man?
Hey, Robert, check this out, though. The Munion is in the house.
No, Munion in the house. We ain't seen Munion since the flood.
What's up, Leon?
Hello, Rod Joseph. How you doing, brother?
Hey, man.
It's good to see you guys, man. It's good to hear from you guys, man. I'm serious.
Hey, Leon. Remember that time Joe was at the house, he was sleeping, and he woke up. He said, why didn't y'all tell me, man, when the cows came? Oh, I never forget that. Joe woke up looking around, why didn't y'all tell me when the cows came?
Why y'all didn't tell me the cows came home? Hey, Joseph, what did that
mean? What are you talking about, man?
Joe, you don't remember that?
I wanted to know what you were talking about.
What are you talking about, man?
That's a big. That was a big question way back. It was a winning time thing. That's a good question, though.
Hey, Joseph, we really didn't know what you were talking about. Do you know yet?
I really don't know what y'all are talking about now.
I bet.
It was a long...
I don't know what you all are talking about now. Are you all
thinking
of some aberration or some illusion I had or something?
Yeah, that was it. You were in a sleep. You were in a slumber. And you were abruptly disturbed from your slumber, and you were quite disoriented. And in dismay and confusion, you looked around and said, why did you guys wake me up when the cows came?
So when did this happen?
We were young.
Well, let me go.
We'll never forget it.
Probably in our teens.
Yeah, we'll never forget it, though.
I am completely oblivious.
You were oblivious that day, for sure.
That was certainly an illusion. I should have been. Why you out in trouble when these cows came home?
Yeah, that's true. That old cow
was a lonely
looking.
That was a lonely looking.
That
was a lonely looking
cow. You had to lean up against the barn to milk it. It was so skinny.
That cow
could have, it would have run away.
You know what I was thinking? I was trying to remember what was the fate of that cow.
Burger?
I think drug
that cow up. I was trying to remember what happened to that cow.
Now that's a good question. I don't think we ate him.
I guess that is sold it at the market, you know.
Not so much.
Tulip Pop
referred to that cow as a dog. He was from Charlotte. Yeah, never seen a cow.
Yeah, he was a city boy. He saw that cow. He came running from around the house and he said, what was wrong with you, boy? He said, I'm scared of that big dog. That's a big dog. I gotta walk around now. Wait a minute, there's a dog around here. So I look at him, I walk around. Where's the dog? He pointed at that cow. I said, man.
Now, I guess to a city boy, that can be quite terrifying.
Especially if you thought it was a dog that big. I have my granddaughter with me. She was asking me why were we talking about a cow.
Well,
tell her to go with the
brother for real.
Say hello to Lauren. Say hello, Lauren. Hello, Lauren.
Hey,
Lauren.
Lauren, tell everybody in Radio Land hello. People all over the world are listening. Please tell them hello from wherever you're from. All right, what is your name? Okay, you
tell everybody your
secret.
Name and where you're from, Lauren.
My name is Lauren, and I'm from Maryland. So I'm just
visiting
North Carolina.
Homegirl.
Do you still dance?
I sing and I dance.
You what?
Dang, yes, you dance.
I sing and I dance.
So you like Michael Jackson. Wow. Okay.
Ooh. Except I'm not a boy.
You said you're not a boy.
Lauren, it is very nice speaking with you. I know you personally, and I'm so honored to know you. She's a brilliant kid, one of those people you can say now, I know in a few years she'll be standing, she'll be sitting or standing on top of the world. That's the kind of young person this is. And you're the kind of young person that I just, like, love to see. I mean, just flat out
wow.
love to see. So thank
wow.
you for being that way. Lauren?
Wow. All right.
Yeah. So, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Brother for Real Radio Show. We're gone. We're all the way live tonight. This is what I figured out. Our listeners do not like reruns. They do not like rebroadcasts. No.
How can they not like rebroadcasts?
Even if they weren't at the live showing, they do not want to hear a rebroadcast. That is one of the things I've learned in 2021.
But
our listeners do not like rebroadcasts. Yes, sir.
People don't like anybody broadcast. Because I think about some of my favorite shows. Like I listen to Joe Madison and people like that. When the broadcast come on, I keep moving. I hate to say it. I was like, even if I hadn't even seen it. Even if you hadn't seen the original one.
That's right. Yeah. It was like, man, they saw that before. They'd be like, I haven't seen that before, but I don't want to see it now. You know? It's weird, man.
About live,
but yeah.
Though.
Our listeners do not like to listen to rebroadcasts. We have to. That is one of the things I learned in 2021. It's a rebroadcast that we're not listening to. Here's another thing I learned in 2021. I have learned not to lend anyone any money or anything else for that matter that I would kill them over.
Wow. Okay. That's pretty good. That's.
Because people will not give you your stuff back, man.
Nope.
Weird.
Yeah.
So just don't. That's a lesson, folks. Don't do it.
Well, you know what I learned in 2021? Tell you what I learned.
What did you learn in 2021, bro?
If you're going to be ordering this takeout food from these folks, and you're going to be ordering more than once. In other words, they came to you the first time and you call them back the next day. You better tip like crazy. I'm just saying. A little inside information for you, ladies and gentlemen. They remember. They got your food. Just a little FYI.
Hey, Robert. How crazy is it to complain about your food and send it back to them to fix it? Send it back to the kitchen to get it right.
Let's put it this way: if I'm ever so honored to take somebody to a restaurant, or I'm so honored to have somebody to accompany me, if they start complaining about the food, I'm out of there. I'm sorry, I'm out. Now, if I do stay, I'm not going to eat any more food. Just period. Let me tell you something, folks. I spent a lot of time in the food industry. My background is food. Almost from day one, I was in food. And you should never, ever, ever, as long as you live and even after you die and come back, complain about your food and then eat it. If you complain because you want a refund or you're going somewhere else. You don't complain because you're going to continue your meal, right? And if you haven't learned it in 2021 or before now, learn it now, huh?
Yeah, what you're saying is do not say, yeah, take this back. It ain't done.
Bring me a done one. It's going to be done when they come back. You're going to be done. It's going to be. Especially now during the pandemic. All their minds now.
Yeah.
That's a good topic.
Ladies
anybody,
and gentlemen.
I'm going to say, if anybody come up with some ideas of what they had learned in 2021, we'd be glad to hear them.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, ladies and gentlemen. You listen to the Brother for Real Radio Show. The number to call in is 215-383-3872. Well, we'd really love to hear what you have to say. We have some more things we're going to talk about in just a little bit. But right now, I'm just trying to get some things out there right off the top of our heads that we learned in 2021. And if you have things, something you'd like to share, raise your hand over there. If you've called in, hit the one key, Robert?
Yes, sir. Hit the number one.
Hit the number one key. Hit the number one key on your dial. But if you have a rotary dial, I don't know what to tell you, but if you know have a digital phone or whatever we call it, hit that.
If you have a rotary dial, go get you a real phone. Sorry.
If you have a rotary dial, you're probably not on this podcast.
Exactly. Exactly.
If you have a rotary dial, you're probably not still on planet Earth.
Oh man, don't say that. One of my favorite listeners is. Wow. Okay. Like I said, ladies and gentlemen, listen to the Brother for Real Radio Show. Right now you have Robert, you have Joseph, and you have Leon on the line. And like I said, the number to call is 215-383-3872. Now call in and talk to us about some things, because here's what I'm getting ready to move into, Robert.
You forgot you have Lauren.
Lauren?
Leon.
Oh, yeah, and Lauren. My bad. Lauren. Hey, Lauren, you still there?
Yeah.
All right, now. Hang in there, baby. Hang in there. So here's what I would like to do, Robert. Now, you have a very successful internet or whatever. What's the word? You tell me the word to use. Show that comes on every Friday. What'd you say, Robert?
People are calling it podcast nowadays.
You have a very successful podcast that comes on every Friday from 10:30 to 11:30 or ish. And now, every time I listen, I learn something. You know what I mean? Every time I listen, I learn something. And I'm sure there are some things that you've learned along the way as well. And I'm sure there are some things that you wished you just like sharing with people, just letting them know, man, don't do this. Don't do this. In a nutshell, Robert, what is it? What do you need to tell people you've learned this year and what they should not do and what they should do, even more importantly than what you should not do?
Well, I would say this. First of all, I'd say we're still in the throes of a pandemic. This pandemic that we thought we'd be gone in, I think, July of 2020 is now going into 2022. So that's really been the story. It's been the story in our personal lives, and definitely has been the story in our professional lives. And business owners, what I discovered this year and the year before, that there's a tale of two pandemics. There's the haves, and then we have the have-nots. And it was exacerbated during this pandemic. Now, some people have done extremely well, I must say. And sometimes it depends on the industry you're in. Sometimes it just depends on the timing, depends on where you live. But a lot of it had to do with people's ability to reinvent themselves. And that has been my message to people in the business community, that stop waiting on things to get back to normal. They're not going to. And I don't want to sound cliche and say this is the new normal, but that is a phrase that most people can relate to. This is where it's going to be right now. So wherever you are right now, expect it to be this way, at least in the foreseeable future. Now, does that mean things won't change? Does that mean that one day the pandemic might end? I'm not saying that the pandemic will, at least it will subside. It'll become less of an issue. But the decisions that we're making right now, particularly these big companies, they have to plan. They can't be planning on what might happen 6 months or 6 weeks down the road. They're planning on, they have to make decisions today that's going to affect them the next year. So they're making these, so when they decide work from home, they're not making this decision based on, well, we're going to make another decision 6 months or 3 weeks from now. They have to make these long-term decisions. Same thing with school systems. I'm saying this to say, stop, get out of this waiting mode for things to get better, for things to change. Dust yourself off. Look at where you are, plant your flag, change your attitude, and go for it. And those are the folks right now that are just racking up. They adopted, they made the adjustment, they pivoted, and they're doing extremely well. So I'm not going to give out any specific advice. I'm going to give out a mind-shifting kind of advice. Going to 2022, like this is a brand new, you got a brand new canvas to paint on. You got a brand new opportunity. Opportunities that you've never seen before, some that you can build upon. But forget about
well, let me just hang on a little bit longer until this pandemic goes away. Don't think like that. The folks that are making the money fight of the pandemic and sometimes the cost of the pandemic. So that's what I would say. There is this tale of two pandemics, the have and the have not. I want everybody under the sound of my voice to get on that have side. Those opportunities are out there. You just got to go for them.
Yeah, thank you. That was beautiful. That was beautiful. Joseph is here.
Yes. Uh-huh.
Now, Joseph's in the insurance business, guys. Insurance and real estate. Robert, you know what insurance and real estate can be. The monster it could be up north in the big cities. But now Charlotte's in the same boat. Yeah, now Charlotte's in the same boat. But Joseph, what's going on, man?
Well, I can attest to what Robert is saying about, like you say, don't want to sound cliche-ish, but we're in what we call a new normal. So man's abilities to survive and to sustain himself to get to where we are right now has been his unique ability to adapt.
Yes.
And any species that has not been able to do that, of course, they become extinct. So we have to think along the line of adaptation. And my business, or for the most part, at least the insurance business, has not suffered.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason for that is because I took on the mindset of doing things a new way.
Mm-hmm.
And in doing things a new way, it has turned out to be better than the old way.
That's right.
It's like I used to think along the lines of, you know, having a lot of people coming into the office and that was a measure of success. However, that has turned out not to be the measure of success. What it has turned out to be is the number of people that call me and I can take care of their needs without them having to come into my office. And when you do that, of course, you get a long-term customer where if they have to come to your office, well, they turn out not to be as stable, because if they can do business, if they learn that they can do business with you without coming into that office, it doesn't matter where they move to, they're going to still do business with you. And I'm glad that I was able to adapt and not even think about, you know, going back to the way I was doing things, quite frankly. But now, as far as the housing market in Charlotte is concerned, in my opinion, it's in a wreck. And when I say it's in a wreck, it has gotten to a point where it's, for the average person to come out here and buy a home, it's almost unaffordable. Because what we've seen in Charlotte, we have seen upward spiral in the price of real estate, but incomes for the most part have remained stagnant. You have a situation in Charlotte now where the affordable homes, up to $300,000, those are considered affordable homes, but these homes, when they come on the market, there's such a demand for them. If a person doesn't already have, so to speak, his money in hand, so to speak, he's not going to get the house. And unfortunately, we have a lot of these private equity companies coming into Charlotte, and they're just buying up entire neighborhoods, literally. Houses, new subdivisions, they come in and buy up the entire subdivision and rent the homes out. Because what they're looking at is, a long-term stream of income. Because anytime you purchase a home, it's a leveraged purchase. In other words, if you can, say for example, put 20% down on a $300,000 house, And but when you get your return, you're getting your return on the full $300,000, not just the $20,000 you put down. And so you have a lot of these private equity companies coming into Charlotte. You know, they have money. Like I've seen them as much as $125 million, and they just going out just as soon as the house becomes available, they're buying them up. And the average consumer just does not have a chance to compete with that. I'm hoping that the city of Charlotte at some point, somebody will come up with an idea to, to halt this kind of behavior, because it's just leaving the regular folks, and of course, it's leaving the regular folks behind. And everybody knows that the foundation to building wealth in America is home ownership. And when you take away that from a large mass of people, you just create generations of poverty.
Well, Joseph, I think what you described is another example of the having of the division of sound cliche again, the rich are getting richer and the poor, not necessarily people are poor who can't afford a house, but their wealth or opportunity for wealth have shrank due to the pandemic, or at least during the pandemic.
That's right. That's right.
Absolutely. Joseph, we got a call on Brenda Lee DeMille, and Brenda Colson Richardson on the line has a question for you, Joseph.
Okay.
Go ahead, Brenda.
Joseph.
Hey, Brenda.
I want to say thank you for bringing that subject up, because the other day I got a text from a realtor, but I don't know this realtor, asking me to sell my property. January, I'll be in here 3 years. But I want to ask you, how do they get your personal information to reach out to you like that to sell and say someone was interested in my property, which is a townhouse, for sale? And I'm like, who are you? I don't even know you. But it said they was a realtor reaching out to me to see if I want to sell.
Right. Well, I mean, to get that information is quite simple. You can actually pull it up yourself, because any type of real estate transaction is a public record.
Okay.
So anybody who wants to get that information, they can. But if you are a realtor, like myself, you can even get more information than you can through the public records. Just like, for example, a realtor, I can look and see what the balance on your home is, who is financed with, if you ever been late on your payments and all that kind of stuff. And a lot of times if they look down and see where somebody is, might be struggling or whatever the case may be, they're going to go aggressively after these people. But getting your information as far as, whether you're a homeowner or whatever, that's very simple to get. And believe it or not, a lot of people are going for that. I mean, I've heard a lot of people say, they got these predators call them and offer them amount for the house, and they actually go for it. But what they don't realize is if they sell their home, they're not going to be able to go out and buy another one.
But see, the point is, I know I'm not struggling with my house, but the point for him to just reach out and say, you want to sell your home, and I'm like, why would you be reaching out to people? Do you see a for sale sign in my yard? Or we can't put it in our yard. We have to put it in our windows. But I'm like, how can they do that? How can they reach out to somebody that don't have a for sale sign in their home? Because I know the market is like that, because my daughter was thinking about moving from Indianapolis back here, and she said the market down, she said really everywhere is like that. If you sell your home, where are you going to go? Because people now, when they go to make an offer, they'll kind of double the offer to get the home, even though the value may not be just to get that. They'll triple the offer, and the buyer will go for it. So you have to have a lot of money.
let me say this, Brand, and Joe can amen me on this, but it's not personal. They can go down, get that information. They can get it on a list. They can get a phone record list. They can get email addresses. They can get mailing labels. And sometimes they can just blanket a neighborhood. It may be everybody in that neighborhood whose home has been within meet a certain criteria. Those criteria could be the value of the home, how much equity you have, how long you've been in the home. And so when they're selecting that name, your name, that when your number comes up, it may not be entirely random, but there is a methodology to it, and it's not personal to you. They're going to call. If you say no, they're going to go to the next name on the list and just keep moving until eventually somebody's going to say yes, and that's why they keep doing it.
That's right. You're exactly right, Robert. I would say we probably get, we might get 4 out of the week. We might get 4 or 5 phone calls. I mean, people are constantly. And see, and that's how they're making their money, by getting people to sell their homes, because right now we are in a seller's market, and you have people moving into Charlotte by the drove. And, you know, somebody moving down here from New York, $300,000 house is a drop in the bucket for them. And another situation we have, too, you have a lot of people that's working from home. And seeing a lot of these people working from home, say, for example, if they living in New York and they get a one-bedroom apartment in Manhattan, it's costing them $3,500, and they working from home. Well, they say, well, I can work from home, still do my same job in Charlotte, North Carolina, and I can get a two-bedroom apartment for $1,800. And that's one of the things, you know, driving the market.
Is that good? Is that good? $1,800?
For a two-bedroom
apartment?
Where
you come from.
Yes,
where
sir.
You came from.
You coming out of New York?
Yeah.
If you coming out of New, if you coming out of San Francisco, Los Angeles, see, those people are moving into Charlotte from everywhere. And one of the main reasons they're moving here, because they can work from home. And of course, and they work from home, get their same, they get their New York salary. You follow me?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, of course, we all know.
One more question.
Charlotte.
Would you say, I know people come here to buy a home that's already existing. I know my nephew came from Chicago. They had their house built, and they said it was cheaper to build than buy an existing home.
I've seen a lot of that. I've seen a lot of that.
So building one would be your best bet if you sold your home to go and build you one.
Well, it just depends. But existing homes and new homes, they're all high. But as far as the price is concerned, there's not a whole lot of difference between the new ones and the new ones and the resale. The bigger thing is with the resale, you're probably going to get a little more home and probably a little more, you know, land than you would with these new homes. Because most of these new homes, they're putting them on, you know, very little bit of land. And the material that they're making them out of is nowhere near, you know, what a lot of these older homes are made out of. Because, you know, a lot of these homes, they look real pretty. They look real pretty when they're brand new, but you give them about 10 or 15 years.
Well, let me tell you this, guys. Even down here in Waynesboro, North Carolina, and where I live in the hood, man, they're sending me letters every day. I'm getting a letter or text message even saying, do you want to sell your house? And I try to call them back, man. They don't pick up.
And seeing the biggest problem with that, is, you know, when people do that, they sell the homes. I mean, you know, just like I was telling my wife, I said, at some point, I said, we're going to sell our home because we're going to get old and we're going to have to move to either a nursing home or a senior citizen community, or we're going to die, you know. So at some point, you're going to have to do it. But the big thing is, if you do it, you make sure you get the top dollar for it, because the way I explained it to people, we had a homeowner association meeting. I said, now, the first thing you have to remember is if somebody calling you about something you own, first of all, you have to realize that it's valuable, number one.
Right.
And number two, if they offer you a price for your home, you have to number – the second thing you have to remember is if they're offering you a price for your home, they're not going to offer you what your home is worth. Because if they pay you what your home is worth, it wouldn't be in the point of them buying it, because they're buying it for an investment.
Exactly.
So
remember that, everybody.
You have to
remember
that. Things you must remember.
Remember that, everybody. Somebody offer you something, they are not offering you for what it's worth. They are offering you what it's worth, because they're trying to make a profit off it. Is that right? Ladies and gentlemen, you listen to the Brother Career Radio Show. The number to call is 215-383-3872. We have another gentleman that has entered the conversation, Minister Curtis Gatewood. How you doing tonight, brother?
Hey, brothers. Can y'all hear me?
We hear you,
yes,
man.
Sir.
Yes, sir. We've been trying to hear you for about 30 minutes. How you doing?
Hey, man. I'm doing great. Sister Brenda, how you doing, Brenda Colson?
I am doing great, Curtis. How are you?
It's great to hear you on the phone. Merry Christmas to you. All that good stuff. I'm hoping my brothers are helping you out here.
Well, Merry Christmas to you. I just got back in town from New York.
Good gracious. Yeah. Was it icy cold up there? How's the weather up there?
Man, it ain't cold nowhere.
It wasn't. When I got there, it was cold, but then the next day it was 50. But before I left, they was calling for snow. So I was ready to leave because I didn't want to be no part of that.
Yeah, well, I will challenge that statement that Leon just made about it's warm everywhere. I had to work in the Appalachian Mountains about a month ago, and it did not get over 34 degrees the whole day. And I'm like, okay. And I did a bunch of my work outside. So, but like I said, I don't know what it's like right now, though, Leon. It could be because I know things did warm up in general, but it was not anywhere near that. It was not anywhere near that temperature when I left. But when I got there in the mountains, yeah, it's cold.
I was talking about on Earth, like sea level, you know.
Right. Okay.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Anyway, brother, what's going on? What's going on in your world, brother Gatewood?
The bad is ordinarily in Appalachia, it'll probably be 0 degrees.
Yeah.
And see, the thing about it is, I don't want to switch the subject, but I don't like all this warm weather in January. I mean,
I don't either. I don't either. It is winter. This is winter, man. I'm seeing green snakes. It's crazy.
Green snakes.
Yeah.
Hey, man, where are those snakes? Who's seeing green snakes?
Green snakes out here, man.
Another issue to talk about here. Green snakes. They're out of the house, right?
And the flies never did stop. The flies never quit. They never did go wherever they go in the winter. They never did leave. They haven't left yet.
Man, I was thinking about coming to North Carolina. Now you tell them I got to deal with green snakes and flies. Never mind.
Yes, sir. Come on down, brother.
Not them green snakes and flies.
I think those are Wadesboro flies.
No, these Marvin flies, man. I mean Marvin. These Marvin flies, they are something serious. But it's not just the Marvin flies. I hear people saying it from all over the place right now. You know, because people don't want people in Marvin to start saying he's up here talking about our flies and stuff. But, no, it's not just Marvin flies. It's everywhere, man. Flies are everywhere right now. I want to say something about the children. Ladies and gentlemen, when the Holler Organization was founded, it was because of a couple of things. But one of the main things was because of the story of the Maasai tribe. And they say the Maasai is one of the mightiest tribes in Africa, in West Africa.
Wow.
And
wow.
But before the Maasai, before the elders of the Maasai tribe would do anything else at the start of a day, they would ask amongst themselves, how are the children?
Wow.
Now, it doesn't take any kind of thought, really, to figure out why they would ask that. Because, of course, they believed in their future. They believed in the continuation of the tribe. So in order for a tribe to continue or sustain, you have to know how the children are. You have to believe in the future. You have to prepare for the future. Protect your young. Make sure they're learning. Make sure they're healthy. Make sure they're eating the right things. Make sure they're putting the right things in their brains.
Yeah.
So if you're not doing that, ladies and gentlemen, if we're not doing that, we're not doing what's required to sustain our culture. Not only that, we have to feed our children their culture. That is your fuel. Your culture is your fuel. It's that thing that you can cling to and say, oh, wow, this is me. This is ours. That said, we met with about 10 young people that we had here, about 10 young people here at the Hollis Center, getting prepared for another production of the Lion King Jr. And the Martin Luther King Commission here, or the Martin Luther King Committee here, they reached out to us and asked if we could invite our kids to be a part of the upcoming Martin Luther King Day celebration. And, of course, so there's a little skit that goes, they want to participate in the skit. So we read our children this part of the skit that they wanted them to participate in. And there's the last line of their skit says, We are living the dream in Anson County. And I read that part of the script. And there's a young lady sitting to my left who I admire very much. That young lady is probably 15, 16. Maybe.
What you talking about?
She said, that young lady said, I'm not going to say that.
Mm.
I said, okay. You know, that took me by surprise, of course. I said, okay. Then another one over there on the other side said, Why should we say that? Why you want us to say that? I said, Well, why not? And they started saying, well, that's all this killing going on and the schools getting bomb threats and we've been locked down on COVID. We can't even talk to our friends. Look around. Half of them not even here today. Where is everybody? So I was really taken by that. I was really shocked. I was really thrown off. I didn't know how to respond. So my response was, well, you have to look at it like this. They're celebrating the dream of Dr. King. And actually, you're living in that dream. Dr. King's dream that he had, the only thing we really to discuss about Dr. King for the most part, in that dream he says, you know, that, anyway, paraphrasing, our children will have the same opportunities as everybody else. We'll have the same opportunities. That was his dream, that we would be able to go to the water fountain, same water fountain as white folks. Our kids be able to hold hands with white children and stuff like that. So you can do that. But the children are seeing deeper into this problem. That's what I need people to know. The children are seeing something different. The children are seeing what's under that. The children are seeing what this is really all about. And unless we grown folks find a way to teach our children, train our children, give them what they need, we're going to lose them.
Leon, you are. I'm quick to say this. I'm going to hand the ball to Curtis. The kids, there's an old saying, out of the mouth of babes. Adults do things for sometimes various reasons, sometimes for prestige, for our jobs, for our causes, and so forth. And sometimes we are incentivized to paint this rosy picture of what's going on really on the ground. But the kids, they're experiencing. They don't have the filter. They're not looking at it through blindness. They're looking at what they're actually living. So I admire those kids' bravery and their honesty. And I think we adults have to listen.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Go ahead, Curtis.
Yeah, it's interesting, Leon, because actually I was feeling those kids when you told me that, because I never did feel we had actually achieved the dream, because of the fact that even as Dr. King started to see things in his latter years, he started to express some of his own concern for where we were headed. I think as a part of the dream that he gave or articulated, which, of course, I think is overplayed because of the fact Dr. King didn't just dream. You know, sometimes people like to refer to the dream because the dream is safe. But Dr. King was a man of action and sacrifice, and he was willing to lay down his entire life for the work he was doing. He often criticized the church and other folk who claim to be good, who would not join him in some of the most risky, or I would say most challenging work. And that's why I think he came up with the phrase, the ultimate measure of a man is not where he stands in the time of confident convenience, but where he stands in the time of challenging controversy. The more challenging his work became, the more controversial it became, the more he saw himself alone, and he started to speak out. And simultaneously, there was a younger generation coming onto him then, talking about self-defense over nonviolence, because they were at the brunt of receiving the beating of police who used police brutality, who were setting up people like Fred Hampton and others using COINTELPRO, going and killing members of the Black Panther Party, even though they were not doing anything wrong. They were out advocating for self-defense, for building up their own communities, running drug dealers out of their own communities, providing food programs for their own communities. And as a result, they were being targeted by police and other people that Dr. King started to see. And so even with Dr. King, he could see young people, and that's why it's so important to have young people as a part of the movement. So I certainly feel your point. Your point is well taken. A lot of times, even those of us who are at the heart of the work, such as yourself and ministers and others, or activists, a lot of times we may feel a different way than those who are actually being targeted. And as you grow older, you are lesser the threat. You are lesser the target to the oppressor. And so the oppressor is targeting these young Black guys and these children who would ultimately grow to become a threat to white supremacy and systemic racism. Because if they are free to think, if they are free to live, if they are free to articulate and grow and develop to their fullest potential, then they become a threat to the lies, the brainwashing, the miseducation, and all the other things that are being used to keep us at a certain in a certain position where we don't cross a line that a racist system has drawn for us. See, there's a line that has been drawn. And so that's why they like the safe Negro, the validated Negro, the Negro that they have trained to be the leader. Because the trained Negro is going to know where that line is, no matter how much they talk about justice, no matter how much they pretend to be about justice, they know where not to go. But these young people, they are, you know, they don't see the boundaries. And so they are the targets. And so we have to help them. So as a part of the King Day celebration that we're putting together, whether we're in Morgan, and I thank you, Brother Leon and Holla, for supporting us, opening up our doors. Brother Covington, if he's listening, Brother Michael Covington, the Notebook Store, that works in association with the Notebook Store, Bruce Bridges, and all those good folk up here. You know, opening up your doors, that's an important thing that you are doing. And had you not been there with your doors open, you would not hear these young people. And that's the cool thing about working with the grassroots and with young people, is you actually hear what the issues are from the actual people who are the biggest receiving the brunt, as Malcolm X would say, those who are receiving the brunt of the whip, the field Negroes, the ones who are out there who are not comfortable, who are not in the house of comfort and convenience, but are out there facing this brutal Goliath on a daily basis. And the fact that you are, in fact, working with young people, you will come out articulating as you are. You come out saying, wait a minute, I thought you could talk about, you know, the dream was coming true. But they brought out the real issues. Now, you know, we are being killed every day, you know. And if they, whether they use black hands to do the killing or whether they use white hands to do the killing, they're being killed just the same. And so they know how vulnerable we are as a race, because we've never been allowed to learn and embrace our culture, that culture that you talked about looking after the children, that whole village that it takes to raise one child. You know, we are products of that village, but the more we go into this future where people are just about themselves and they're not about the community and they're leaving children to be scattered by the wolves that are described in the Bible in John 10, then we are seeing it play out, but it's not new. So we, this is why this show is important. This is why brothers like Joseph and Robert and yourself and Brenda and other people who are willing to come on and address these issues is very important. So this is a very important platform that you're putting out here and opening up this door. And I do just want to make an announcement before we go, but I've probably taken up enough time to open it up.
We'll get back. We'll let you make that announcement in a minute. But I wanted to ask Robin if he heard the same thing I heard. Curtis just called me a field Negro, man. That's cool now. I mean, I get that. I get what you
You better be glad to be a field Negro if you want to hear Malcolm.
Good.
Well, I'm always throwing all that.
I'm good.
Y'all
ever
listen to
Bob
Marley?
Y'all ever listen to Bob Marley? When the field Negro say, let's get up out of here. And the house Negro say, there's nothing better than here. And the field Negro say, we leaving here because everything is better than here.
And you're very bomb. Okay, then I just got it. You know, it just hit right. It hit right.
It's
quick.
A compliment.
It hit right
it's
quick.
A bag, it's a
backhanded feed. They said kill
it's
them before. They said kill
it
them
right
before.
It hit right quick. Yeah.
Yeah, Joseph. That's what's going on. That's what we're seeing. They're trying to kill that seed before it grows, buddy.
That's well,
right.
That's what I said.
They kill them before they grow.
Yeah. That's a
well,
deep shit. You got to listen to these messages, man. The people
yes.
came before us, they saw all this stuff.
Yes.
Right. Leon, I work with children out of the school system, which I'm up, and then with my nephew. I guess that's why they come around me. Children watch as adults. They study you.
Mm-hmm.
They watch you to see what mm-hmm. you can do. What do you stand for? Are you saying what you gonna do, or you just talk? Like the church, they see the church. Like Curtis say, it's a line the church is they're not gonna go over. That's why you don't see them in the community like they should be. it's a line they are not going to cross over, and I don't care what you do there. They're not going to cross over. But the children watches what you say, what you do. And that's why when you spoke that, and they know that is not what's happening in Waynesboro and probably in Charlotte too, that is their best life, which is not. Cause they see this, and you telling them this, and they know that's not true. They'll speak up and tell you what they think. I work with them. So you got to be for real in front of them. You got to show them that you are for them. You are doing things to make it better for them and not just word. So people are, a lot of people are with word but no action. And I've noticed that with my children, the one I work with, they watches you. I guess when I'm there, they know when I speak, I'm speaking what I'm going to do, and they're going to see what I'm going to do. If I'm going to help them, if I'm going to go to their home, they're missing something, and I'm going to go to their home and buy what they are missing or give their money to them, what they need, and still love them and still chastise them when they are wrong. They see the both coming from me. So that's why I say children, we got to be more real in front of our children. The church has got to stand up and be more real for our children, our youth. They got to come over the line and start doing better for our youth because, like I said, the youth is the future. If we're not training them to be what they need to be and what they want to be to make their life successful, it's just, what is it, just hitting a tamarind together, and that's it. And I'm like, the children are the future. Like, the children are our future, and it's how we are training. So I'm just saying the churches need to start getting out the church, getting in the community, and see what is needed.
Man, I got to make my announcement. She is hitting it. She is tearing it. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say, in closing on that subject, I was going to say I was very, like I say, shocked. That's the word I can think of right now. When the young lady said that, but I was impressed. Don't get me wrong. I was very impressed. But then I told the kids or the young people, I said, look, you guys are what I would consider or was assuming or thinking were the most positive in the community, and they very well could be. And that's the scary part. So if that's what young people, if that's what's in their minds, we have to open up dialogue about this. We have to invite them to the table. We have to listen. You have to go in there and parents. You must go in there and talk to your kids. You must go in there and talk to your grandkids. You must hear what's on their minds because they have things on their minds you cannot imagine. I would not one of those children would I have imagined they would have rejected the idea of saying just at a program. I mean, I'm on a program, you know, like an MLK program. I'm living the dream. No, we're not going to say that. Before it was over, I said, is that the general consensus of this 10-member group? And they said, yes, we're not going to say that. Okay. So I was, you know.
Hey, man, that's what's up right there. Leon.
That was what? Yes, sir.
Just
do your
announcement,
Curtis. Yeah, just do your
announcement. Yeah, listen. See, Leon, I've been pretty hard on the church. But what I said I was going to do before I get harder in 2022, I'm going to make a proposal, one that will be measurable, one that will not take a lot of work considering the magnitude in which the church has resources. So God, since God has blessed us with multiple churches on every corner, many of which are rightly located in high homicide areas, the organization that I'm going to work with, of course, that you know I'm working with, Jesus Uniting Souls to Increase Community Engagement, which is the acronym JUSTICE,
administration, and of course you know Leon and everybody, I hope, that are listening, we gave birth to a Stop Killing Us solution campaign. We are proposing an MLK Peace in the Streets coalition be built focusing on churches whose sole purpose will be to ask that each participating neighborhood church commits to mentoring 10 at-risk youth. Now, the steps we are proposing for this particular coalition are few. They're targeted toward God's church. That's it. You know, we're not trying to create something big that nobody can understand or one can figure out. It takes 10 years to figure out. No. And we are targeting God's church, but it would have immeasurable results toward saving lives. So we are asking that churches who are already providing a mentoring program, because that's what some people are going to do. They're going to say, hold on, wait a minute. We already doing this, Gatewood. We've been doing this for 500 years. So for those people, we are asking that those churches who are already providing a mentoring program, just let us know. Let us know the details so we can automatically add your name, your church, to our list, if it's okay, and learn from what you are doing and have you serve as advisors and or co-leaders of this coalition. In other words, there's no ego here. I don't try to give the credit for it. I'm not looking to be put up and glorified. Give glory to God. If you are doing something, let me know so I can put it down. Because guess what? We don't see it. But that doesn't mean it's not being done. But the Bible said this, Leon. It said, let your light so shine that men may see your good works. And then it's only asked that once they see your good works, we don't become arrogant. We don't become self-exalting. We give glory to God. So we're saying to churches, if you're doing what I'm recommending, don't get mad. Don't say we're already doing it. Fine. Help me. Tell me what you're doing. That way we can talk to the churches who are not doing it together. The key is, the ultimate thing is, we do something differently than having a weekly session of four walls, two prayers, three songs, one sermon, and three collections. That we can take this so-called faith that you have and put it out here where these young people, Leon, that you just talked about, they can see it. Because, see, when they see it, they can believe it. But you can't keep telling them about Jesus and Goliath and the three Hebrew boys and all these other things that you talk about in the Bible, and you never show your face where there's trouble. You never show your face where the fire of gunshots and the fire of brutality and the fire of racism is raging, and they never see your face. So what we're saying to these people is, if you have the faith, we shouldn't have a problem. Join them. Do what the scriptures say. If you want to say it's yours, say it. But let the light shine, Leon. And what I'm saying is, as Brenda just said, it is time to take the church out of the four walls into the streets. And that's what we are calling on the church to do. And we are only calling on the churches to do what is written in the scriptures. It's not coming from Curtis Gates. And if you say you're celebrating Dr. King, do what Dr. King did. He came out of the church. He let his light shine. He was willing to lay down his life like a good shepherd rather than the hirelings who keep raising money and running and leaving the sheep to be scattered, destroyed, and murdered in the streets. So we're just saying, whether you're in Wadesboro, whether you're in Charlotte, even if you're in Chicago, I've already gotten someone from Rome, Italy, saying, wow, I love that idea. We are willing to try it here in Italy. So why can't we use the church
that we claim belong to God and help God's children who are being murdered in our streets. We're just asking for churches to take 10. We're asking 100 churches in Charlotte, 100 churches in Greensboro, 100 churches in Fayetteville. And see, what we're doing, we're looking at the list where we have the highest concentration of violence, and we're prioritizing those cities. And we are saying, just say that you're willing to mentor 10 boys at risk, or girls, whomever you choose, at risk people who are dying in the streets. Because if we catch them while they're 8 years old, 10 years old, the chances are they will not be bait for the gangs. They will not be bait for the drug dealers and the drug runners. They will not be bait for premature death. If we would catch them early and do as, what's his name, Booker T. Washington said, it is easier to build strong children than to repair broken men. We can do this, church, but we're going to use the King Day celebration to take it to another level and not just use it as a date to talk about the dream when people are living in a nightmare, or to just talk about we shall overcome when people feel like they're not overcoming, they're overly being killed. We want to use it as a time to put a plan together. Not only do we have a dream, Dr. King also had a plan, and it's time for us to put a plan together on his day to carry forward nonviolence in our own community. If we can be nonviolent to white racists who were trying to murder us and rape our parents and kill us, we ought to be able to be nonviolent to children and women and people who live in our communities.
Amen, brother. Amen, man. We appreciate you and commend you on that effort. Good luck on that, actually. That is a good strategy. And, man, they're killing each other in Italy, too. Right.
Yeah.
That's a good strategy, man. We appreciate the effort you put into and your passion you have for the work you do. We appreciate it. Hey, Joe.
Anson County, Leon. Thank you. We're coming back to Anson County on January 16th, which is that Sunday. We had a good time, brother. We have people who are writing, still singing. They love the singing. They love singing with the Gatewood Brothers. We had a good time, and people are excited. I know we have to be careful, so I'm asking anyone who's coming, make sure you take the precautions that are coming out of the medical field or the scientists who are proposing precautions that would minimize the spread of the pandemic, wearing your mask, making sure you're getting your shots, doing those things, and keeping a certain distance. We're going to be calling on those things, but God is good, and he's opening some doors that people don't even see right now. And those young people will be a testament, and they are going to be at the front driving this train.
Amen, brother. Thank you. Joseph, is Lauren still there? Is Joseph still there? Anyway. Ladies and gentlemen, you have been listening to the Brother For Real radio show. We really appreciate you being here tonight. We really appreciate you listening. We appreciate your support, your loyalty, and your love. We are wishing all each and every one of you a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. Happy Kwanzaa. Thank God for you. We love you. We want us to grow together and love each other together. Find ways to reach out to your children. Find ways to reach out to your other family members. Find ways to reach out to the elders. Find ways to pray for each other. There's a lot going on. There's just a lot going on. And I'd like to give our condolences at this time to the Lizzie family. Our friend Melvin Lizzie has passed away. Also like to send condolences to Tyson, Robert Tyson's brother, Reginald, passed away, one of the Funk Force brothers. You know, the DJs back in the day, we had the Funk Force, the Gate 3, the Funkatizer, the the Star Child and the Chili D's. We had it going on, the D2, the Regal Kid. We had a lot of stuff going on back then, a lot of fun going on back then. Just got to keep each other prayed up, brothers and sisters. You brothers got anything you want to say in closing, man? I'm just, as Daddy used to say, I'm full.
Well, I just want to conclude by my part by saying it's been great talking to the audience this year and working with the clients that we've had the pleasure to work with. And I want to wish everybody who's on the phone, the brothers, Brenda, and everybody else, thank you for tuning in today. 2022 is going to be good. We just have to go into it with the right attitude, the right positive approach, and great things can happen. So I'm looking forward to it.
Amen. Thank you, brother. Mr. Gay, well, you got some closing remarks, man. You want to give a shout out to anybody, anything? I want to give a quick shout out to all the people who supported us during our, who support us throughout the year. When I say we, I'm talking about the Holler Center. We appreciate whatever, all the support we've gotten. You know who you are. Just God bless you. I mean, we have, this has been a great year for the Holler Center because of the support that we get from people who believe in what they do, people who want to do something through, if they have to do it through another vehicle like Holler. We appreciate the support. And I did tell this young lady, Ms. Teresa Dunlap, I would give her a special shout-out. I asked her permission to give her a special shout-out. Shout out for writing us, she and her husband, Rick Vincent, for writing us a check for $5,000. Man, who does that? But anyway, thank you, everybody who has reached out to it. My cousin up in Virginia who wrote us a check for $1,000. Who does that? Randall. Please thank you guys for doing it because we cannot do what we do. When you see all this stuff, you see this stuff we're doing, we cannot do it without that support. So we really thank you for believing in what we do enough to give no matter what the amount. We just appreciate it because it takes that to do it. God bless you. Man, that's someday we'll be together. Oh, man, I'm going to cry.
Just to kiss your sweet, sweet baby. Oh, you ever, ever.
Very good.
All right, brother. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, brother.
Happy
go.
New Year.
Hey, Joseph.
Good night. Yeah.
Joseph. Is Lauren still there?
Yeah.
Hey, Lauren.
Yeah. Lauren. Come here, baby.
Tell Lauren to come and tell everybody good night, man. Yeah.
Say good night to everybody.
Good night.
Good night, Lauren. You have a happy new year, okay?
Okay. You too.
All right. Love you.
Good night, Lauren.
Love you too.
All right.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Good night, boys. Talk to you
That's
later.
That's a wrap. All right, brothers.
Bye, Joe.